Shinar. I'm originally from Israel, hence the name, but I am doing my PhD in the University of Potsdam, Germany, towards finishing my PhD. I'm doing it under the supervision of Olfreiner Hamann, and also in collaboration with Rainer Heinich and Andreas Sander, who are sitting here. And we're going to come back to the massive stars now. I'm going to present results which are a part of my thesis, which concern the Wolf-Rayet stars in the Small Magellanic Cloud, specifically the binaries. And the title I chose here is somewhat different than the abstract, somewhat more rude. What's up with the binary formation channel? And I hope you'll understand why in about 15 minutes. So I'm glad that some people have already introduced Wolf-Rayet stars, but I already included a very short introduction in case you forgot what they are. So massive Wolf-Rayet stars. Two properties that we always associate with them are, first of all, very strong massless rates. So typical massless rates would be 10 to the minus 4 to 10 to the minus 5 solar masses per year. Terminal velocities are of the order of thousands of kilometers per second, and the winds that are responsible for these mass loss are understood to be radiatively driven. And the reason for these strong radiatively driven winds are their very high temperatures, varying from 50 to even 200 kilokelvins, and their huge luminosities, which are of the order of million solar luminosities. The stars are also very known to show hydrogen deficiency, or even to be hydrogen-free stars. And they are typically, if you ask astrophysicists who know them, they will typically be associated with evolved massive stars that have helium-burning cores. They are also suggested, as Rainer, who mentioned that? Someone mentioned that before. Suggested to be the progenitors of core collapse supernovae, type 1bc, so hydrogen-free supernovae. And this is indeed a very big debate these days. I just want to point out one fact, though, that a Wolf-Rayet star is, in fact, officially a spectral type. So as long as you observe a spectrum which looks somewhat like this, with these impressive emission lines and very strong massless rates, it would be classified Wolf-Rayet star. But these stars here are examples for stars that are, in fact, very young and not necessarily hydrogen deficient and very massive, and they are still called Wolf-Rayet stars. So just remember that these properties, being evolved, being helium, having a helium-burning core, does not apply to all of them, which is why these classical Wolf-Rayet stars that are hydrogen deficient are usually called classical Wolf-Rayet stars. So I'm going to be concentrated mostly on them. Basic question, of course, is how do these stars form? And we know, well, we discussed about their hydrogen deficiency, and back in the 60s, before the theory of stellar winds was really developed, people hypothesized that the most likely way for a star to get rid of its hydrogen would be in a binary system experiencing Roche-Loeb overflow, so donating its hydrogen layers to a binary companion. And this is called the binary evolution channel for Wolf-Rayet stars. For around the 70s, as the theory of stellar winds became more and more solid, following works by Castor, Abbott, Klein, and by Conti, it became clear that, in fact, single stars can drive the mass loss rates which are necessary to rid a star of its hydrogen layers. And this is called a single star formation channel. So after a star has gotten rid of enough hydrogen and its opacity grows due to chemical evolution, and its luminosity grows, so it would look like a Wolf-Rayet star without needing a binary companion. However, in the recent decade or so, there has been kind of a trend to go back to this binary formation channel. And this has two main reasons. One is that we know now that binaries are very common among massive stars. And the second reason is that massless rates have been reduced by typical factors of about 3 in the recent decades. And this is due to clumping. So we know now that massless rates are lower than what they were believed to be in the 80s, which means that stars have a harder time getting rid of their hydrogen. So people start pushing this scenario again. So it is an ongoing debate now. How important is this binary channel? And there are, for example, a review by Nathan Smith, a very recent review. If you read it, you'll see a very strong claim saying that most of the Wolf-Rayet stars are formed in binary systems. The nice thing is that single stars, or the single formation channel, is sensitive to metallicity. The lower the metallicity, the lower the massless rates, and the harder it is for stars to become Wolf-Rayet stars. So we expect in a low metallicity environment, such as the SMC, the Small Magellanic Cloud, which has about a tenth solar metallicity, we expect to see less stars that are formed as single stars and reach the Wolf-Rayet phase. The binary channel, at least to a first order, does not care about metallicity. And this is why we expect in the SMC, if we indeed crunch in some numbers like some people have done in different studies, you would in fact expect, based on theoretical prediction, and here I have to say, theoretical prediction means comparing the observed population of all fresh stars to evolutionary tracks and population syntheses. So not a very direct method. But still, I would say shortly, as theory predicts, that the majority, or in fact all, Wolf-Rayet stars in a galaxy such as the SMC are expected to form via the binary formation channel. Okay, so this is a claim. Let's take a look at the SMC sample. There are only 12 Wolf-Rayet stars that are known in the SMC, so it's low number statistics already. All of these stars, except of one guy here, belong to the nitrogen sequence, WN stars, so nitrogen rich, and five of them are confirmed binaries. And they have pretty short periods of 10 to 20 days. The companions are typically O stars. Only in one case, the companion is in fact another Wolf-Rayet star. First thing that is strange is that the fraction 5 to 12 makes about 40% binarity. This is comparable to what we observe in the galaxy. If binaries are more important for the formation of Wolf-Rayet stars in the SMC, one would expect to see more binaries probably. That's not the case. There have been resolutions offered for that. But to really understand what's going on, what you want to do is to analyze these systems and to put them in an evolutionary context. You want to constrain the impact of binarity on these systems. So that's what we did. We performed the spectral analysis of the binary in the SMC. Rainer Heinrich actually analyzed the single stars. I worked on the binaries. And to analyze a binary, we used the power tool, which was already introduced before, a spectral modeling tool. What you want to do is basically to have two models which, when added up together, reproduce the observations. And sometimes we would use phase-dependent observations, sometimes we didn't have this data. The methodology is thoroughly described in the paper that we published. I'm not going to get into that, I'm just going to say that it was a headache. But I believe that the results are pretty reliable. And you end up having luminosities, temperatures, massless rates, abundances, and so on for both components of each binary. And so I'm going to jump straight to the results. First thing we wanted to do doesn't have much with the basic question of this paper, which is the impact of binarity, but rather we wanted to use binarity to calibrate or to test mass-luminosity relations or to compare against mass-luminosity relations. Because you know that binaries offer us a very reliable method to measure masses. For Wolf-Rayet stars, this is indispensable because they have very strong winds and we cannot see the stars. So we have to use these binaries to measure their masses. And we did that, and so what is plotted here is the orbital mass on the x-axis against the luminosities as derived in this study. I could talk for hours about how the orbital masses were determined. We didn't always have all the information necessary. Some assumptions were made, and this is described in the paper. But the results, what you see here are the Wolf-Rayet star components of the binaries plotted on this curve. The colors correspond to the hydrogen fraction in these stars. And the curves that you see here are mass-luminosity relations published by Greffner et al., calculated for homogeneous stars. So, for example, the blue curve is a homogeneous star containing 50% hydrogen. The green curve is a helium-burning star, hydrogen-free. And this is also the Eddington limit. And if our Wolf-Rayet stars would be nicely homogeneous and the results would be perfect and the relations would be perfect, we would expect each point to lie on its corresponding curve. It's obviously not the case. One could sometimes blame the error, but that doesn't seem to be the case. There is a clear trend here. And so, again, I could talk about this for hours, but what we interpret this as evidence that it's pretty clear that all these stars here are helium burning. And yet we observe, except for the WO star, we observe hydrogen on all of them. We find that this is a strong indication that they're not homogeneous, in fact. They are helium-burning, they show hydrogen on their surface, and they show this excess luminosity because they're also shell hydrogen-burning. Next thing we wanted to do is to put these stars or the systems in an evolutionary context. Now remember, these are binary systems, so they might interact, right? But as a first step, we said, let's assume there was no interaction. So there's a lot of information here, you don't have to understand all of it, but what you see here plotted are HRDs with the complete SMC sample showing only the Wolf-Rayet components on the HRD. The small symbols correspond to the single Wolf-Rayet stars, or putatively single, and the large symbols correspond to the binaries. And what you see are two sets, the colors are again hydrogen fractions, and what you see are two sets of tracks. We already saw the talk by Dori before. The two sets of tracks assume two different things. One assumes non-homogeneous evolution, and one, well, indirectly, we just discussed this, assumes very rapid initial rotations which cause homogeneous evolution. And we did, this is not something that is easily seen in this figure, but what we did in the paper is a statistical quantitative analysis between the tracks and between the sample. And we found that the homogeneous tracks for the binary stars, as maybe could be expected from this here, we already knew that they're not really homogeneous, they did not do a very good job in reproducing their properties. And by saying they're reproducing their properties, I mean not only of the Wolf-Rayet component, but also of the O component. We checked for consistency with the age of the O star and so on and so on. These did not do a very good job. This did a much better job in reproducing the observables. However, the problem is that these tracks, as you can see, go very strongly to the blue, to the red, before entering the Wolf-Rayet phase. And what this means, when a star has a more or less constant luminosity but decreases temperature, it becomes huge, kind of a red supergiant stage. And at this point, they would interact. These are not legitimate tracks to use. So the next step, we move to binary tracks. Okay, and the binary tracks are parameterized with the initial period and the initial masses, so there are a lot more options to explore. Also, of course, a lot more uncertain physics. But we worked with a certain set of tracks calculated by J.J. Eldridge, and what we did is determining for each system, accounting for both stars, the best tracks that would reproduce the observables. And so we derived for each system initial masses and periods and ages. Indeed, as we could expect, I don't know if you can see it, but there are dotted gray sections on these curves, and these correspond to the Rochlaube overflows. These tracks assume non-homogeneous evolution. So as we expect, the stars interact, transfer mass. However, there's a very important conclusion that we find here. The initial masses in all the systems that we find, you can see 150, 150, 160, 80, they're all in the excess of 60 solar masses and more. These stars would become Wolf-Rayet stars anyway. They do not owe the Wolf-Rayet phase does not owe its existence to Rochlaube overflow. It might affect the properties or the abundances or the detailed ages, but they do not, they would become Wolf-Rayet stars anyway. So, yeah, not the best colors. But I will just summarize with my conclusions, summarizing everything I've just mentioned. What we find in this study is, first of all, that chemically homogeneous tracks or chemically homogeneous structure does not really correspond very well to the binaries. It does a much better job for the single stars, which I didn't mention. And what we did in the paper, we interpreted this as a possible signature for tidal interaction, because in our binaries, their periods are long enough so that synchronization would actually slow down the binaries. But I had this discussion with Yorick Fink, who actually claims that homogeneity doesn't have anything to do with rotation for massive stars. So we're not sure if they're massive enough to be... Anyway, this is open for discussion. If this is indeed the case, then it's pretty hard to avoid Rochlaube overflow. It would be hard to avoid it, because if they're not chemically homogeneous, they would reach radii that would imply Rochlaube overflow, according to evolutionary tracks. But the initial masses that we find would mean that the stars would have become Wolf-Rayet stars anyway. So this means that even the binaries in the SMC do not seem to, except maybe one or two, do not seem to owe their lives, that the Wolf-Rayet stars do not seem to owe their lives to Rochlaube overflow. So this is why I chose the title, What's Up with the Formation Channel, because we set on this journey with a prediction that all of them would form through binary evolution. We find that, in fact, perhaps none of them formed due to binary evolution. We don't try to give solutions to this problem, but rather to point it out. One, I spoke to Selma de Ming, for example, in a conference two months ago, and she suggested that the SMC might be abundant with such stripped stars in Rochlaube overflow, but that we do not observe them because of an observational bias. Maybe, but at least we need to find a couple and to do some statistics. There could be errors in evolutionary models. I told you that these predictions are based on them. It could point out that there is some very important ingredient which is missing. And that's it. I will leave speculations to you. So thank you.
I just want to mention that if there's something missing in the models, it doesn't mean that they're erroneous or they have errors. It's not the same.
Okay.
Because the stellar evolution model predict metallicities for a lot of things and time scales, so it doesn't mean that they have errors. It's maybe are incomplete, which is different.
Accepted.
Any more questions?
Have you checked the wind optical depth of the SMC evolutionary models? If it's around one or below one or above one?
The optical depth of the evolutionary models?
Yeah, the optical depth in the wind.
I have performed the comparison with the mass loss rates, if that's what you mean. I haven't looked at the optical depth of the evolutionary models.
Yeah, because why? This is the same as in my models. So I think SMC models have also optically thin winds.
Yeah.
And that might not make them Wolf-Rayet stars in the sense that they wouldn't show these broad emission lines.
Well, but they do. Not but all
they
of
do,
them.
Yeah,
but
sure.
They look like Wolf-Rayet stars, but simply with weaker mass loss rates. But in this sense, they are not fundamentally different than other Wolf-Rayet stars. They simply have weaker mass loss rates.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about it later.
Okay.
So can I ask one question? That is, what are the primary mechanisms that which make them hydrogen deficient?
What are the mechanisms primary mechanisms here? Which create hydrogen deficiency?
Yes, the Wolf-Rayet stars, you said they are hydrogen deficient.
Yeah, so for, as I said in the introduction, for single stars, the mechanism would be that the core is burning hydrogen, so the hydrogen abundance becomes lower and lower in the core, and as the star strips itself of the wind, and you start seeing inside the core, you will see less and less hydrogen until you see none. For binaries, it would be that the outer envelope is donated to the companion, and you can see into the hydrogen burning core, which would have an increased helium abundance. So basically the same idea, getting rid of the outer hydrogen-rich layers.
Yeah. But in their spectra, you do see hydrogen profiles, emission lines also.
Yeah, I see hydrogen as well. They're all deficient of hydrogen. Okay. I think the most extreme one has 60%, which is really high, and it's really a weird system. But typically, they would have between 10 and 40%.
Thank you. Yeah. We now request Astrid Lambert.